Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to this episode of the Scottish Paddlecast, brought to you by the Scottish Canoe Association. You are currently tuning in to the People of Paddle Sport series, where we are catching up with some of our staff team who are sharing their experiences of planning paddling for the weekend ahead. I'm your host, Sarah Bonu.
And I'm your co-host, Andy Murray. Today we're joined by the SAS team of development managers, Roger Holmes, Callum McNichol and Lara Cooper. Three very experienced paddlers with vast knowledge of paddling on the sea, white water and on lochs. Between them, they have a wide and varied roles supporting clubs, centres and individual paddlers to ensure that activities are delivered with maximum enjoyment and safety. Today we are chatting with a safety focus to help others have an enjoyable and safe experience on the water.
Hi folks.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you all doing? We hear you have some really exciting plans for the weekend.
Hope so.
Yeah, what are you getting up to?
So I'm hoping to get out and go paddling with my granddaughter on the loch if we possibly can, if it's safe to do so.
Right. And I live in Aviemore. We've got a local river, so I'm hoping to get out on the river this weekend for a paddle with my husband.
And my plan was to head out sea kayaking, but looking at the weather, that might change. So we'll just have to see.
You've said you're looking at the weather, that might change. How do you know that the weather's going to be okay? Or what's something that you would be looking up for?
I mean, for me, I look at the Met Office weather app and I looking for, is it going to be raining? If I'm taking the granddaughter out and me and my partner are taking her out, we're looking for it to be fine weather. But also particularly when paddling and paddling out on the loch, I'm looking for what the wind's doing, where it's coming from, how strong it's going to be. Is it going to cause waves on the loch? The longer a loch is, for example, the more likely that the wind's crossing, the bigger the waves are likely to be. So those are things I'm sort of looking for. I guess it's similar for you guys, is it?
Yeah, I'm going on the river, so the wind doesn't make so much of a difference to me. If it's a headwind that's going to slow me down, that's going to be not so enjoyable. For me, a bit is the how difficult the river is, and is that suitable for the people who I'm paddling with? So the Spey, which is on my doorstep here, it's given grade 1/2. You can find that out by just guidebooks will tell you that, but there's a lot of information on the internet. You can just Google the river and you'll find out what grade it is. So the river I'm looking at doing is grade 1 and a bit of grade 2. Grade 1 means it's moving, but it's not really got any hazards on it to catch you out. Grade 2 can be a bit more wavy, a bit more features, a bit more rocks and a bit more manoeuvring to do. So a complete beginner wouldn't want to go out on grade 2, but somebody who's been paddling for a while would, or a beginner on with an experienced guide or someone to help them. So the how difficult the river is really important to me.
Yeah, and I think in answer to your question, Sarah, about the weather and what are the deciding factors, I think I would start with who I've got with me. You know, so this weekend I'd plan to go out with some club paddlers who are fairly novice. You know, so that in itself would just make me ask some specific questions about weather and whether or not they've had experience in the wind, or whether or not they've had experience in poor visibility or waves. So this weekend I do have a group of beginners, and that's made me think that exposing herself to wind is probably not the best thing for them. So think about who you've got, and then I go online and I Google the wind or the weather forecast, and there's loads of different places you can get weather information from. You can go to the Met Office and get specific coastal information. You can go to windytv.com and get some pictures with wind direction and wind speed. And I guess if you're able to look at a picture, with the wind arrows on it, and then look at bits of land and ask yourself the question, well, is it blowing towards the land, which might be a little bit safer than blowing away from the land? But then again, if it's blowing towards the land, is it blowing over a stretch of water, which is then going to cause big waves, and is that something that we're trying to achieve, you know, to experience these waves or not? So start with the group and then look at the forecast and build pictures around about that.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, on that point as well, Kat, even on the loch, it depends, although the weather, wind might say it's coming from the southwest, because of the mountains and the hills, it might change what happens to the wind and where it funnels through. So sometimes it's also just looking on the water and what's happening. For my trip, if I'm taking the granddaughter out, I'm trying really low levels. I don't want too many big waves. If I was going out myself, maybe different, or as Callum was saying, with that experienced group. But it's just be aware that other things affect the wind, not just the actual direction, particularly on in amongst the hills.
Callum, what sort of wind speed? You said you're going out with some novices this weekend. What sort of wind speed are you? Would you be happy to have as like a headwind?
Yeah, anything up to 10 miles an hour would be a good indicator for progress. You know, we can get beginners to paddle upwind up to 10 miles an hour, and then after that, it gets a little bit more tricky and a little bit more effortful. I guess the we have to be careful also with weather forecasts that we're looking at a measurement that we're familiar with, because especially when you're on the sea, we talk about nautical miles an hour as opposed to land miles an hour, and there's a subtle difference between the two. So when I am looking at forecasts, I just make sure that I set the preferences to something that I understand, if that's miles per hour or nautical miles per hour or kilometers per hour, but we just have to be careful of that.
The opposite of that is really good for us as paddlers. If it's a gentle breeze behind you, it pushes you gently on the way. So that makes life a lot easier. And Callum said it becomes more effortful when there's a strong wind against you. And that usually, for me on the sea, that equals less enjoyable. I'm looking for nice, you know, and I think that when we talk about who we're going paddling with, the motivations of the group's really important. Some people might want challenge, and so going out in conditions that are going to be a bit more difficult for them is all part of the fun. But for a lot of people, it decreases the fun. So when it gets harder, it becomes less fun, as well as less safe, but it becomes less fun. And at the end of the day, we want to have nice time on the water. So how willing or how much people want to push, let the environment push them, is a critical thing in what we're doing. This weekend for me, it's about having had a busy week at work and just want to get out on the water, and I want something easy, really easy. I don't want to push myself at all, because I just want to switch off and enjoy the nature. So I'm looking for things that are going to be not challenging at all for me, just that nice and easy.
Getting back to the point Lana made there about the wind and the effort of paddling into it, it's also really important for us to think that when the wind's blowing in our face, we can get cold quicker as well, which is, you know, true throughout the whole year in Scotland. You know, just because we're in the British summertime at the moment, we can't, you know, we've lulled into a false sense of security that it's going to be nice and warm. If we're paddling into a headwind, then we're likely to get colder quicker. I guess it's a little bit like blowing on your suit, you know, to cool it down. You know, so that's a factor when you're paddling as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be taking an open boat this weekend, and that becomes harder to control. Once you get in the wind, it starts to want to spin round, related to who the heaviest person is, and it makes it harder to control and just makes it less enjoyable. I mean, my partner certainly doesn't enjoy strong winds if she's paddling solo. So we might paddle tandem, and if we were going in any sort of strength of wind. So we just think about how we might travel together.
So in the hope that the weather is exactly what you need for your plans this weekend, what sort of equipment might you be considering taking to keep yourself and the rest of your group safe?
I guess, first of all, I always take a sort of some spare clothing. I take a first aid kit. I'll take some spare clothing, not just for myself. I'll take some spare clothing for those who I'm going with, because they might not be quite so well equipped. We're wearing buoyancy aids. I'm wearing something that'll keep me dry, because even if it doesn't actually rain, there's a chance I might get wet. So like a gogol and maybe some waterproof trousers. It doesn't have to be specialist things like dry trousers and dry suits and wet suits and things like that. Something to keep me comfortable, I guess, on the water. Good thing about a canoe is you can carry so much stuff. Sometimes it's going, let's limit this a little bit, because it's so easy to just keep throwing kit at the boat. So those are the first things I'm thinking of. What about you guys?
First thing I always think about is my food.
Well, yes, that's a good point. Yes. Yes.
So, the trip I think I'll be on the weekend is only a couple of hours, but even so, I will always have some cereal bars or something to hand that I can access pretty quickly. Because if you do get hungry when you're on the water, your energy levels drop. And also you stop thinking clearly too. Mm. And you can easily be, what you think might take 2 hours ends up taking 3 or 4, and you think you're going to be getting off at 12 o'clock and it ends up being 2 o'clock. So always having some food and if it's chilly, a hot drink in a flask is really good to take with you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the same on the sea, you know, all these things that these guys have just explained, I would have them with me. And, you know, take your camera as well. You know, we get ourselves into some great spots and there's opportunities to take photographs and recall it later. I guess there's specifics for the sea which might be a little bit different for inland on rivers or locks. So I would almost certainly take a form of communication that I can contact the Coast Guard. That could be a VHF radio if I have the skills and the license, or it could just be a mobile phone, which I'm keeping in a waterproof pouch. With that phone or with that VHF, I can actually get up-to-date weather information. You know, and that's really important when we're working in this this environment, like when we're on the sea or we're on rivers or on locks, you know, the changing conditions which we encounter, we have to keep that in the forefront of our mind with regards to safety. So being able to keep our eyes up and look round about us for weather changes or changes in water levels is really important, but also being able to talk to the experts, you know, and when I say experts, talk to the Coast Guard. And ask them about whether that's going to, you know, help us in our decision making when we're on the water, which is important.
Yeah, and conditions can change, can't they? Even if the forecast is given, I've been out on the lock before now, and the wind's changed around 180 degrees, and all of a sudden, what was it? I was expecting a tailwind to go home on, is suddenly a headwind all the way back. And as Laura says, you now need your extra snacks.
We have this term on the sea called seamanship, which is a really difficult thing to explain. And it's a kind of lifelong skill that you just keep on feeding into your seamanship skills as you get, you know, more experienced and you reflect back on what worked and what didn't work and, you know, an instance that occurred. And I think it's really important for you just to operate within, obviously within safety parameters, but also within your abilities and your capabilities. The plan for this weekend was for me to head onto the sea and paddle from Port and Cross around the Wee Cumbrae, but I'm looking at the forecast and I'm looking at that picture of the wind direction. I'm thinking, well, that's just going to be too exposed and it's going to set the challenge way higher than what's acceptable. So the plan is to my seamanship skills are kicking in, and I'm saying, well, if I head upwind a little bit or up the coast a little bit, then I'm going to be in more shelter from the islands and more shelter from the Cowell Peninsula, which will give us less conditions and it will allow us to have a better and more fun time on the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I might do the same thing. You choose one side of a lock or the other because it might be more sheltered because of the hills, and just look where the wind's going. You can see which direction it's more sheltered and choose that side. And you can sometimes tell that, you can tell by looking at the water and seeing which side is choppier or not choppy, just gives you a bit of an indication.
For me, when I'm on the river, it's more about how high the river is. So the wind is less of a factor, but rainfall is important. So the more rain that comes into, more rain that goes into the river, the higher it will become. And we can imagine that when it's in flood, it becomes quite dangerous because the river's suddenly in the trees, and taking debris down with it, and the rapids become much bigger than they were before. And the things that when I can look up online to see how high the rivers are, there's a great feature, Where's the Water, which has got green, amber, red. So green means it's good to go, and red means it's too full and it's very high. So that's really useful. But also when I arrive at the riverside, I'm looking for things like the colour of the water. So when there's been loads of rain, it goes quite a sort of milky coffee brown because it's bringing all that debris down with it. Mm-hmm. It's much clearer when there's been less rainfall. And also I look at how full the river looks. So if it's right up in amongst the grass and the greenery, then it's probably not normally that high. So normally you can see when a river's a bit lower, there's rocks on the edges and dirt on the edges, and doesn't look quite so full. So that's a good indication for me. But also the weather. So let's say this week it's been quite showery, but there's been no heavy persistent rain. So the chances are there might be enough water in the river for me to paddle it, but it's unlikely to be in flood conditions. And then when I get there, I see what it looks like, and it all adds up and looks about right.
Okay, that all makes a lot of sense. But you've all mentioned sort of like instances of things going a bit awry. How would we let people know where we are, like in case things go bad, or what would be the course of action to take if the weather does take a change for the worse, or if one of those other instances occur?
I guess I'd let other people know that I'm going out and where I'm going. As I think Callum said, I do take a phone with me so I can contact people. And I have a waterproof phone that I then put in a waterproof case because I'm slightly paranoid that things might not happen. And I have it so it clips to me so that it doesn't disappear and I can't drop it in the middle of a lock or middle of a river wherever I'm paddling. And yeah, I mean, inland, it's likely to be fire and rescue, less the Coast Guard, that we'd actually end up being called out. Similar for you, I guess, Lara, on that one.
Yeah, and like you, having your mobile phone is a piece of the equipment that you feel really lost with if you suddenly don't have it anymore. So as Roger says, paying real attention to making sure it's full before I go out, so it's fully charged. I know how long my phone lasts, the battery lasts, so as it's getting older, it's a bit more sensitive to the battery draining. So I'll put it in aeroplane mode, so it's not using battery quite so much. People can't get in touch with me, but if I need to reach out and get in touch with other people, then I've got a full battery and I can use that to call 999 if we need to. Very often it's not that severe, so something might have gone a little bit wrong and people are starting to not enjoy the day so much and we just need to get off. And on the river, that's finding the nearest spot where you can all gather together, not splitting up, so staying together as a team, finding the nearest bit of bank access so that you can all get to the bank and be safe. When you're all there together on the shore, you're all safe. So that's a great place to be and to be started. If you've got your spare clothes with you, you can put some clothes on, you can be warm, you can have something to eat and drink. So that make all of a sudden takes the sting out of anything that might not be going quite to plan. And then on the river, what's important is you know where you are. So if you're only 200 meters from where you started, and you know that there's a road on whichever side of the river, then we can just go to the road and walk back. And that's not going to be too much of a drama. So the other thing I've got on my phone is the map. Yeah. So I can have a look, and I've got I just use Outdoor Active as my map on my phone, and it pinpoints where I am and the road network and the features around me that'll just help me navigate my way out onto a road to then be able to walk to help, or even phone a friend and say, can you come and pick us up? We're here and we're not supposed to be here, we're supposed to be there. Yeah. So very often it is just those sorts of things that we call on.
And you know, and it's a great question, because you know, inevitably, you know, things will change, not just the weather and the water conditions, but you know, the way that people feel on the water, you know, you might take a different route for a whole bunch of different reasons. So that planning process, the time that you spend planning is really important to your decision making. You know, so not just jumping blind onto the sea or onto the river or onto the lock. You know, spend a little bit of time beforehand, having a look at a map, having a look at a chart if you want to get nautical. You know, and planning your trip and having plan A and plan B and plan C, so that you've thought about these things and it doesn't come as a surprise that, you know, the coastline that you're paddling up doesn't allow you to land because there's lots of rocks there. If you've spent a little bit of time or a long bit of time, you know, planning, then it's it makes decisions a bit better. And you know, I would inevitably tell my wife that I was heading out, you know, and where I was going, or somebody back at the house. And before we're getting onto the sea, I would almost certainly contact the Coast Guard, you know, so it's just part of our routine, our safety considerations, that we contact the Coast Guard every time we get onto the sea. I mean, but modern technology has moved on, and we have lots of different apps and lots of different bits of software that we can log into, and we can put details of ourselves and the boats that we're using and our expected trip. Yeah, so the RWA Safe Tracks app is particularly good. So that allows us to put in our route, and then it will follow us en route as well. So people back home can have a look online and see where we are, and we can use that as a safety mechanism for the time that we spend in the sea.
So what sort of equipment and clothing would you be wearing for your different trips, and what would you advise for beginners that maybe don't yet have equipment and are having to borrow or considering buying some new equipment?
I mean, a lot of the time, general outdoor equipment, general outdoor clothing suits, you know, a pair of trousers that non-cotton that wick and dry easily is quite good. Some waterproof trousers, you know, the sort of thing you might go walking with, or waterproof jacket, keeps the water off, keeps the weather off. Fleeces, wicking t-shirts style that's not cotton and will sort of cling to you and stay cold is quite good. I mean, you can't shortchange on things like buoyancy aid. You need a buoyancy aid that's of a suitable standard to keep you afloat if you do end up in the water. But general outdoor clothing, pair of wellies if I'm going in my canoe, it works, keeps my feet dry, you know. Similar sort of thing would work in the other activities, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, I'm along with my lunch, I'm never very far away from a woolly hat. But again, in Scottish weather, it's you know, even in the summer we get cool breezes. This week it's pretty chilly breeze, and we lose so much heat from our head. So if I'm not wearing a helmet, so on rivers sometimes there's a risk of banging our head, we'll wear a helmet. But if there isn't, we're likely to be out without that on our head. So having a woolly hat. When it gets really cold, I wear two. When it gets even colder, I wear three. If it's a three hat day, people are probably saying you shouldn't be out.
Yeah, and I guess picking it back up on Roger's point about a buoyancy, that's really important. You know, so I wouldn't go onto the water without one, and I wouldn't allow, you know, people that are with me to get out on the water without one. And and not only with one, but it has to be the right size and it has to be fit for purpose, you know. So spending a little bit of time, again, just looking at it and making sure the buckles and the zips and all that kind of stuff are working, because they can sit in garages and get corroded quite easily over time. So a well-fitted buoyancy would be important. And, you know, and this weekend, whilst it's windy, it's going to be sunny, you know. So we want to try and keep ourselves hydrated. So I would definitely take lots of water with me on the sea. You know, it's not something that we can... not like rivers where you can potentially drink the river water. You can't do that with the sea. So definitely lots of water, and maybe a sun hat and some sunglasses and some suntan lotion. And then something that which I can easily access to put on to insulate me or to keep the wind off me. So like a wind layer. And like Roger said, that doesn't have to be specific to the activity. That could just be any kind of outdoor wind or jacket that you've got with you. Probably wouldn't want to get too wet when I'm on the sea as well. So if I have a pair of wellies that I can wear, or a pair of dry trousers or waterproof trousers, then that would be a good thing to have as well.
Yeah, definitely over the sun hat, because with my hairstyle, it's the sun hat is. I was thinking this weekend, yeah, the sun hat's going to be more important than the woolly hat, perhaps.
This might be a really silly question, but do you need to be really fit to go out into the water? Or is it something that someone can, you know, just rock up, take a flight of fancy and then do it?
I think it's all start and learn your limitations. I mean, I wouldn't go out and run a marathon, but I might, you know, I might start going for a walk.
Yeah.
So it's starting at your own fitness levels. And, you know, I was talking to someone recently and they, they'd just taken up paddleboarding and they were just starting. It was up and back on a small little lake. And that's a good start. And think about, and the weather can have an, you know, depending on your starting point, you might change your starting point and just paddle downwind, for example. Going down a simple bit of grade one river might be easy. So, I think anyone can do it. It's just, you know, we haven't got an equivalent couch to 5K, have we? But maybe we should.
If the weather conditions are nice, then the actual physical demands to paddle aren't that high. So anyone who's, even if they're pretty inactive, will be quite happy on the water for an hour if the weather's not making them work hard. Mm-hmm. On our river, we can drift quite a way. So it's also really light on our lower body. So our legs aren't used. Leg fitness isn't so important. And that really helps some people whose knees or hips are shot from other activities they've done. So they often find paddling much, much better because they can sit and chill out in a boat. I find that, so I struggle a bit with mobility. So I've got a history of back injury. And I find this with a lot of other people, it's discomfort from mobility that makes it more difficult just because you're sat in one position. And if you're not mobile, that can be uncomfortable. But like Roger says, if we know that I'm okay for half an hour, I'll go for half an hour. If I know I'm okay for an hour, I'll go for an hour. And so it's just taking small steps.
And it's a really good question, Sarah, because people ask me a lot about fitness levels but the reality is you're sitting down, you know, and you're traveling sitting down. I mean, I can't think of any other outdoor activity where you can travel the same distance whilst you're sat down, you know, and which is great, you know. So again, going back to the planning part of it, if you've planned the trip, you know, according to the conditions, be it water levels or wind direction, then you're going to get, or actually on the sea, the tide conditions as well, which we haven't spoken about. You know, if we've got that additional factor, that additional bit of environment pushing you in the direction you're traveling, then it's going to be less arduous on your body. So I'm constantly surprised by the number of people who mention after a big long paddle that, you know, that was quite easy on their body, you know. Lara mentioned that you don't use your legs, but if you can, you know, include a little bit of, you know, leg pushing against the foot pegs in a sea kayak, you know, then it becomes an all over body exercise as opposed to just your arms. So, you know, with great coaching, you know, or with even the simplest amount of coaching, you can get shown the correct technique and which helps a lot to your enjoyment of the day. So it doesn't have to be, in fact, it's very rarely the case that you're absolutely knackered after a day's paddle.
Yeah. And it's done. I find I very rarely get out of breath. You know, if I walk up a hill, I get out of breath. If I'm paddling, most of the time I'm paddling and keep holding a conversation at the same time. Cause that's half the enjoyment. It's that natter while you're paddling along. So yeah, I don't think I don't think you need a massive upgrade of fitness, and with a bit of technique, as you say, Callum, you can last all day with some improved technique with that bit of coaching from a club or an outdoor centre or just some coaches you tie up with. It can be quite an efficient, really easy activity.
But then again, as you know, if you want it to be physical, you know, and you want it to be a workout, then you can definitely make it that if you want that.
Yes.
Like any sport, you know, you can put maximum effort in and you've got, you know, a whole bunch of different races and disciplines that are competition throughout paddle sports, you know, and you can make it as energetic or as relaxed as you want it.
You could guess you can dawdle, you can walk, you can jog, you can run, you can sprint, you can do all of those things in a boat. Pick whichever one you want to do.
I like Roger's idea where I can talk and paddle at the same time. Because I can't climb the flight of stairs without telling whoever I'm climbing up with to keep quiet because I'm out of breath. But that sounds good. You mentioned that there are courses we could do to sort of you know, learn more about technique? Where would we be able to find that? Or like, what are resources that we could get to go about that?
I mean, there's lots of providers and outdoor centres that could offer paddle sport. It is linked off our website. You can go find a course or find a provider on the website. Local clubs, that's another really good place to go and find someone to go and teach you to coach, teach you to paddle, sorry. So yeah, there's lots of places you can go and investigate.
There's a really good website called Go Paddling, which is full of really good information for people who want to go paddling. There's loads of safety advice on there, as well as all of the find a club, find a centre that Roger mentioned too. So that's a good place to start having a look at, in delving into that information.
So I've heard quite a bit about standard paddleboarding. So what would be some sort of safety measures to keep in mind when doing that, or some courses that we could take to learn more about it?
That's a great question. And there's no getting away from the fact that there's been a huge, you know, increase or explosion in popularity of stand-up paddleboarding. You just have to walk down the beach, you know, on a nice sunny day to see, you know, tens and if not hundreds of people out on the water. And there's no escaping from the fact that, you know, it's popular, it's cheap, we can move them about in the back of our car, we can inflate them, you know, it's going to grow in popularity from where it is at the moment, and it's already gone massive. But we are in that dynamic environment, you know, when we're on the sea or when we're on a river or when we're on a lake, you know, or a loch. And all these considerations that we've talked about so far are just the same when you're on a stand-up paddleboard. You know, absolutely, there's a need for us to have, you know, a little bit of time on the beach or on the riverbank or on the side of the loch, just spending our time looking at the environment and trying to work out what's actually happening. And when I say what's happening, it's looking at, you know, which way the wind's blowing, and we can tell which way the wind was blowing by looking at other people on the water or looking at other boats on the water or other boats that are on moorings, you know, and just even looking up in the sky and looking at the clouds. Are the clouds moving fast? Are they low, or are there no clouds at all? You know, are the birds, you know, flying in a particular direction? There's loads of different indicators that tell you about wind, and wind's really important, especially when you're on open bits of water. You know, mm-hmm. We want to be careful that we're sheltered from the wind wherever we can be, and we know which direction it's blowing in. The simplest thing for the SUP or for the stand-up paddleboard is to make sure that you've got a buoyancy aid on, you know, so you have something which is going to keep you afloat. We have a thing in water of the temperatures that we get around here called cold water shock, which means if you fall into the waters around the British Isles, you know, that regardless of how competent a swimmer or how water confident you are, you're going to, you know, become quite tired quite quickly in the water because of the temperature. We need to have something which is going to keep us afloat when we can't keep afloat ourselves. So definitely wear a buoyancy aid, and get instruction. You know, go to a club or go to the go online to the resources that Lara's already outlined, and get help from people who know about it, and or even just go online and get involved with conversations that are happening on chat sites or websites that you can just maybe share experiences of going on the water or look for handy hints and top tips about where to launch and where not to launch.
One subject, Callum, I always hear about is leashes as well, and people wearing leashes in different environments.
And
if I'm going on the loch, I might wear an ankle or calf leash, but what about in the other environments?
I think that, so the leashes are quite important, because so that gives you a connection with the board. So which is a little bit different to a canoe or a kayak when you're sitting in it or when you're sitting or when you're kneeling in it. You know, when you're on a board, you can quite quickly fall off it, and you don't want it to separate from where you are. You know, so you want to be attached to it. So we attach ourselves by a leash. And generally speaking, you know, if we move up the environment into water, which is moving, then we want to probably move the leash up our body. So instead of attaching it to your ankle, you might want to put it around your waist, or even better still, put the leash attached around a belt around your chest, for example. Yeah, so we have a, you know, a, concept or, you know, an idea within paddle sports that we try and reduce the hazard of getting entangled in ropes or in lines, yep, or entrapped in these lines. So we definitely want to be able to detach ourselves from the leash. And if you put it around your ankle, then there might be the odd occasion where you can't actually reach your ankle. And that's going to be a disaster. So we want to be careful with leashes. We want to make sure that they're of the right length and made of the right material. But we want to try and get them as high up our body as we can when we're wearing them.
There's a new SUP Safer course, which has just been released by British Canoeing, which is a great way to learn some of those skills for yourself. It's a 4-hour course and will teach you lots of the basics about keeping safe on the board. It's absolutely ideal for anyone who's just bought a board and is just starting to play with it, or, you know, has had the last couple of years and is pottering around on their local bits of water or taking it on holiday. So that's a great course to find and getting a bit of expert help just to get you started, so that you don't fall into the common pitfalls, which are easily avoidable.
I think it's always the danger when you're starting is you don't know what you don't know. So it's getting that advice and that expert knowledge from different sources. So that's a really good source to go and get some of that.
That sounds really good. I like playing a game called Worst Case Scenario, where I like to stress myself out for no reason. So, you know, in case I do get lost on the water, what would you recommend we do?
I guess if I'm out on the loch, I've got my phone. I might be able to pinpoint myself on my phone with the map. Particularly in my local area, I do actually carry an ordnance survey map, and waterproof ordnance survey map in my bag. So I'm hopefully able to locate myself. So looking at landmarks around where I am, that isn't always possible, but most people's phones will actually, you can locate where you are, is quite a good way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit harder on the river to get lost because you're contained by the banks of the river. So you're at a point on your journey, and sometimes it doesn't matter hugely. You know, it's good to know in terms of am I a third of the way down and I've got 2/3 left to go, and if it's getting dark, that's obviously an issue. So it's good to know roughly where we are, but pinpointing is not quite so much of a thing. And I just, like Roger, use the same tools he uses in that one.
Sometimes it's landmarks, isn't it? So you might have so many bridges or certain things you look out for that you go, okay, I haven't hit that landmark or that headland or the whatever. Not such an expert on the sea though, Callum, I'm afraid myself.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to think of an occasion where I've been lost on the sea, and I can't really think of one, to be honest. I guess a bit like Lara's point about you're on a journey. You've spent a little bit of time planning your journey. You've looked at where you're going to start. You've looked at where you're going to finish, and you've looked at some points in between. So you're going to hopefully be in that, you know, in that region. I guess you could get blown off course if you were, you know, traveling a little bit further from shore, and you might not land at the right point on the crossing. But is that important? I guess it's as long as you're at a point, then you can then work out, you know, and we can do that electronically using our phones nowadays, you know, or we could use that more traditionally using a map and a compass or a chart and a compass, and you learn skills to relocate your position using obvious features. So we have a mantra with on the sea that, you know, when you're navigating, you should always know where you are. You know, so we are, you know, we're mindful, we're deliberate about pinpointing our position on a journey and knowing where we are. And that's, you know, to help for our safety, but also for the safety of other people as well. You know, if there's other boats in the vicinity, then we can help in an emergency if we need to, if we know our position.
When I'm paddling on the sea, I always have my map on my deck in front of me so I can see it. And I just like to know where I am. So I'm always thinking, oh, there's that house or there's that, you know, marker or whatever. And it's all part of the journey. So as Callum says, it's it's hard to get, it's the only way we really get lost is if we don't pay attention to where we are on an ongoing basis. And it's not like in hill walking, we'll hear on the news of people getting lost in the hills, and that being one of the major reasons for mountain rescue call-outs. It's not the same on the water. It's not the major reason that we get call out, you know, that people need help. If you're worrying about things, it's one of the, you can put that towards the bottom of your list.
And we talked about the weather forecast and tuning into specific, you know, weather forecasts. So when we're on the sea, if we're listening to the inshore waters forecast, which is a bit of gobbledygook to tell us that it's actually specific to the sea, but it gives us four different things, and one of those things is visibility. Yeah, so it tells us how far we can see, or how far the forecast is predicting that we can see. So if we get poor visibility, then that's going to start alarm bells ringing in my mind about, well, actually, the how far I can see is going to reduce a fair bit. It's still going to be quite far, 2 miles, you know, to 1,000 meters is poor visibility, but anything below 1,000 meters is forecast as being fog. So if I see fog on the forecast, that's when I start thinking about my trip and the need for being a little bit more specific for navigating and being knowing exactly where I am all the time.
Does that then mean you stay closer to shore, maybe, if you're in an experienced group?
Yeah, exactly, Roger. Yeah. So if I was within an inexperienced group, then I would stay closer to the shore, and I probably wouldn't do any crossings which were going to put me, you know, into that place where I couldn't see the land. Mm-hmm. You know, but then again, if I was on an expedition, or if I was on a trip that required me to use my navigational skills, then that would be fine. I just need to rely on my own knowledge and my own abilities to get me where I want to go.
That makes sense. I know loads of people have started paddling recently for like mental health and well-being reasons. It's quite a nice calming thing to do. If someone were to say take an emotional support animal or a pet with them, what would be a sort of safety consideration around that?
On that one, I mean, I do take, we've got a year and a half old Sprocker who's very keen on going on the water and comes on the board, on the paddle board, or in the canoe. For me, he comes in with his own little buoyancy aid.
Okay.
It means it helps him keep it a little bit warmer if they do end up in the water. Helps keep him afloat. I mean, he's a good swimmer and he will go swimming rivers without. But if I'm out for a day using a buoyancy aid, it means also I can get him back in the boat and on the board a lot easier because it's got a handle on top.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got a Loki as well, haven't you, Lara?
He's not a big fan of the water. He's got a really thick coat and he doesn't like being wet. So he's not a companion to take on the water, I'm afraid. I was thinking, though, as you were chatting, our old dog, he used to come out on the water with us. And it's important not to have him on a lead. So having the handle that you can hold on to them with on their backs is really good, because you can pick them up and put them in the boat if you need to. When Callum was talking earlier on about not having things that can get caught up, the lead would be one of those things. So it might get snagged on something and they get into trouble. So it's much better to not have the lead on them when they're in the boat and on the water, maybe on the bank. But.
And I don't have any pets to come sea kayaking with me, but I've got four young boys and they're like wild animals at times.
Okay, so getting lost is not a thing to worry about, as I've been very kindly reassured. But what happens if I fall into the water?
So I guess the more experienced paddler, you learn how to either rescue yourself in an open boat and get yourself and your kit back into the boat, which you can learn from clubs and things. If you're a kayaker and you're experienced, then maybe you can learn to roll and things like that. But I guess one of the important things, if you haven't got those skills, then don't drift, go too far away from shore. In the situation in the lock, I would, you know, if I wasn't very experienced, I wouldn't go down the middle. And even if I do, I would tend to stay close to the shore, where then maybe I could, if things do go wrong, I could swim to the shore. But also everyone else who's in my boat, can be assisted to shore if I can't get them back into the boat. So it's maybe those considerations. Same with you, Lara.
Yeah, it's a really good skill to learn and be taught. So that's one of those things we can pick up on in a basic intros course, and they can teach the way to do it properly. In the river, moving water environment, if we fall in, we get ourselves out of our boat and swim to the shore, which is great, we're safe, but often our kit's floated away. And then we end up with a situation where we're not all together, the group splits and it starts to spiral. So keeping all your kit together, but it needs a bit of skill just to learn that practice, to collect all your equipment, swim to the side. So you've got all your bits and pieces together. It's much easier on a stand-up paddleboard because you've got less to worry about. We've got a leash on which connects us to the board, and we can, as long as we hang on to our paddle, we can swim to the shore that way. I think that the main bit of advice for anyone is not to panic when you get into the water and just stay calm and breathe for a second, but clear yourself out so that your head's above the water, and then just take a second. And most of the time you're absolutely fine. And it's just having the bit of calmness about the situation that you can collect your paddles and think what you're going to do.
Yeah, and it's no different on the sea. You know, again, just trying to slow things down a little bit and thinking about trying to stay calm, you know, and following the instructions of the people you're out with, you know. So if we're all paddling close together and we're able to help each other, then that's something that we should be doing. So you just use your common sense. If you're close to somebody and somebody's in the water, then get them to grab onto your kayak or grab onto your boat and to help each other to get back in. Mm-hmm. I think what's important to point out, though, is that we don't deliberately separate from our kayaks or from our canoes. You know, that's the last thing that we want to be doing. If you can imagine, if you're in the water, then you're not as visible if you're floating by yourself with just your shoulders and your head above the water. You know, you're way less visible than you would be if you're floating next to a kayak or next to a canoe. And also, the kayaks and canoes they tend to have inherent buoyancy in them. So there'll be buoyancy bags, or there'll be buoyancy bits of foam, or there'll be bulkheads which keep them afloat. So whilst we're wearing a buoyancy aid, you know, the boat that we're in should offer you some buoyancy as well. So holding on to it and staying with it is really quite an important lesson to learn.
And practicing those rescue skills and getting back into your boat when you don't need to do it is always worthwhile. Can you get back into your boat? You might have seen it on a YouTube video, but have we actually tried it? And have you tried it with those people you're out with, just so you know where you're at and paddle accordingly to those, choose your venue, choose your conditions.
Yeah, and I would just reiterate that, Roger, it's really important, and especially for the stand-up paddle boards, you know, that whilst we can stay on the board, you know, but if we fall off, can we get back on it? You know, and it's a good lesson to learn. And it's a good challenge to give yourself. You know, if you go out and buy a cheap board and head out onto the sea without much experience, you know, just practice jumping into the water and trying to get back onto it in the right conditions.
I hope we haven't put people off with talking about all of the things that can go wrong, because the majority of the time, if we do good planning, that's probably the most important thing, is that we check things out before we go, and we spend some time doing that, and we don't get drawn into the trap of I'm here now, I'm going to get on. We look at what's happening in front of us and we make good plans that way. 99% of the time we'll have a brilliant time on the water and it'll be wonderful. And most of those situations that we talk about, they're avoidable, and we can spot them coming and we can stop them in their tracks, so we carry on having a nice time.
No, you haven't put anybody off. I think it's been really reassuring to listen to all of this. My last question is, do you have a paddling playlist? Are there any songs that you listen to, or any kinds of music that soothe you when you go paddling?
I don't listen to music. I like to have the natural sounds in my ears, as opposed to, you know, just take it all in, the sounds of the birds and the wind and the sea and talking to my friends that I'm with. That's what I'm listening to when I'm out.
Yeah, I'm with you, Lara, on that one. I'm just enjoying the wildlife. See, there's things you see when you anything from wildlife, from osprey to beavers to otters to, I mean, I'm not guaranteeing that every time you go out, but you just immerse yourself in that, in the hills and the wildlife.
Yeah, I've got to be honest and say I'm partial to a bit of Pink Floyd.
That's fair. There's a nice alliteration going on there. So it's quite nice.
It's been a great discussion hearing about your plans for the weekend. I hope the weather behaves and you all manage to have a great weekend on the water. Thank you to everyone at home for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can find us on Podbean, Spotify, and Apple. We hope you enjoyed listening today and enjoy getting out on the water soon.